This will be taped, and the ones involved tonight are Signa Busted and her certified hearing dog Bridget, and I'm Leo Busted, and we're going to talk tonight about assistance animals, and we're going to start off with a demonstration, which is always a hazardous kind of thing. And we won't go through the whole repertoire, but just show maybe one thing that the dog might do. I came home about 8 years ago, last April, and my wife couldn't, she'd suddenly lost her good ear. And she had this dog. And the dog was then three years old. She was 3 years old, and I said, well, because I'd worked with hearing dogs, I said, we'll get you a hearing dog. And she says, no, I'm just getting this one socialized because it had a bad upbringing and she'd had it 1 year. And I says, well, can you part with it to be trained, because I had a person that would train it. And she says, no, I don't think so. So I says, well, we'll train it to be a hearing dog, which was kind of foolish when you think back on it, but that's what we did. And what she's going to do now is to tell you how she went about this briefly, and you can go through the ones and finish off with the ones on the ringing the doorbell and so forth. So, and you speak right into this, right from where you are. Speak loudly. Does anybody here need one of these assistants for your hearing? Okay.
This friend of ours who had the dog obedience training in Pullman took on the job to help because we could not do it. And she came to our house every day, 5 days a week for close to a year, and we trained Bridget with little bits of liver. She was trained to jump on me because in case my hearing got worse, it has to be a matter of touch. So she jumped on me when the smoke alarm rings, the alarm clock, the telephone, just a moment here. We're hoping this demonstration works. And also the doorbell. And we were in an apartment for 4 months that did not have a doorbell, so we had to train her to a knock on the door.
Does she still get liver?
No, we got something easier, so we don't have to boil liver.
That was so sweet, Bridget.
Oh, Bridget. Oh.
You see, did you tell him that you had to break it? You see, we taught it not to jump on the bed, be on the bed, except when we were gone, of course. And in fact, that's where she is. When we're out of our room, she's on her bed. And also, she was taught not to jump on her, and then we had to, of course, teach her to jump on her. Ordinarily, you'd start an animal at 8 months to a little over a year, you see. So, And the chief will be around till Saturday, so she'll answer a lot of questions if we get time. What I want to do tonight is to cover a lot of the assistance animals, and I'll define that as we go through here, and we'll see what we have here.
Could you just tell me, is she trained only like for the doorbell and the? Or would she be trained in terms of traffic?
No. Did she go through what she was trained for?
Yeah. Well, the doorbell and telephone.
Smoke alarm, timer. She picked up on the timer by herself. She just came up to her and touched her one day when the timer went off. And then, of course, the chief gave her a treat. And that's a pretty good inducement. So. But it's a hazard when you're baking cookies and every 8 minutes. One of the big hazards for assistance animals is they get too rotund. I'm having trouble with this. And I've already into too many. So we'll back up a little bit. If the dog itching your bothers you, let us know and we'll. I was looking for an introductory slide and I thought this is appropriate. I've been listening to a lot of lectures this week, and most of it's bad news. And I think of this egg, and it looks out, and this is how I felt. You look around, and you just soon get back into the egg. But that isn't an option. You know, I stop the world. I want to get off. Tonight, I'm going to give you some hope for people my age and older. We're talking about hearing dogs here. Dogs also can be trained to answer your question. Some of them, you can extend it to babies crying and pots, maybe the whistling of the teapot. Also, it's for emergency vehicles. So you can pick up, and the dog picks up on some of these. As I mentioned one. It also mailman and the paper boy and.
I think we'll leave.
Okay.
You want to leave? All right. I call the dog sometimes Dingbat, but never when I'm out with a walk with the chief, because they might think I'm calling her Dingbat. my introduction is, I worked with hearing handicapped a good deal in earlier days, and I was involved in the first follow-up or the first placement of a hearing dog in the Northwest. And to go back a little bit in the history of hearing dogs is... goes back to Minnesota. This lady had trained her dog to be a hearing dog herself because she was losing her hearing. And then it died. And so she called up a local TV station and says, my hearing dog died and I need another hearing dog. And they said, we don't know about hearing dogs. And so they said, you better call up the SPCA. Which they did. They called a local Humane Society, and they started a program, put 6 dogs into it, but they realized the need for these was so tremendous that they couldn't meet the need, so they contacted the American Humane Association, who set up a program in Colorado for this and continued quite a while. And that is their first dog out of that program in Colorado. The girl on the right was placing it. This is Mrs. Christian, the recipient. And you notice the orange lead. And you notice our dog had an orange lead. If orange and yellow lead or collar and collar is a sign of a certified hearing dog. And that's what she has. And this was an interesting experience with Mrs. Christensen and her dog Ranger. And we came out to visit her, and then we could hear the dog come to the door and then go back and get her. That dog went through the regular training. And most hearing dogs aren't trained not to bark, except with intruders. And that's how this dog was trained. Bridget is a barker, and she continues to be a barker. And what is fun, I was hoping we'd do that tonight, but the chief wanted to leave. She's tired of listening to me. Whenever we give a demonstration and she's present, or you've seen her in groups here, and then when the people clap at the end of the lecture, the dog barks and starts making a fuss. Yeah. Well, the secret is that every night the chief grooms her, which she isn't particularly keen about. And the signal for play at the end of this is to clap your hand. Oh. And she goes wild, you see, just like she does. And to show you how they pick up on things, one night, Friday early on, we were in the kitchen, and I get a lot of phone calls. And we had about 4 phone calls in a period of 15 or 20 minutes. Well, the chief always answers the phone when the dog is there, which is almost all the time. And so the dog, we keep her in training. Whenever I come home, I always knock on the door or ring the doorbell. Keep it in training, see? Well, after the 4th call, when the chief would run up, answer the phone, and hand the receiver to me, on the 5th call, the dog came directly to me and jumped on me, tired of the middleman. In this case, we tested out then. You see, this was a follow-up for Miss Christensen. The dog got us, and then we put her, she went laid down by her on her bed. The dog is supposed to lay down right next to the bed. Then she played the smoke alarm, which was most critical for us, too. Because when my wife goes to bed, takes out her hearing aids, which she has a hard time also with those, but when they're out, just about anything can happen and she can't hear it, you see. So it's very important we have the smoke alarm because I'm gone a very great deal. So that was very important to her. And the dog got her up, jumped on top of her, got her out, and then the dog came running out after me and my associates out living room to clear us out of there too. And then they tried the telephone. She had a very poor recording, a tape recording of a telephone. And the dog looked at us, looked at the telephone, looked at that tape recorder and said, "Who's fooling who?" And then she says, "If you have any complaints?" She says, "It doesn't wake me up with the alarm." And she had a buzzer alarm and it was trained to a bell. But it sure takes care of the chief. That's his favorite occupation of all that she does. When she's out in the kitchen with me and the chief's, her alarm clock goes off, that dog goes, although it's now 12 years old, goes about 60 miles an hour from the kitchen through the living room, bedroom, and onto into her bedroom, and then takes a flying leap about 12 feet on top of her. That has a way of waking you up. So enough of that, unless you have questions. So we move on then, and this whole hearing dog thing, as I say, started in about 1976, officially. That's when the first one started. So this is a very recent thing. That's why most people don't know about it. When the chief was recently in the Sweeties Hospital in Seattle, And I told them, you have to straighten out the nurses and doctors about hearing handicaps because most of them don't understand it, and how you approach somebody that can't hear, and also that she had a hearing dog, and the associate surgeon started laughing, you know, a hearing dog, oh. So I got him straightened out too. I spent much of my life straightening out people. One of my laws states that the trouble ain't that people don't know anything. The trouble is that most of what they know ain't true. This is a thing on Dog Guides for the Blind by Nelson Kuhn. And he goes into much of the history of this. And one of the thing references is, this is from China. And you see this fellow right here with his dog and his stick, obviously has a guide dog. Huh? And also, I looked up some material, and back in time of Pompeii, which, about 70 AD, There's a depiction in Pompeii of a person with a guide dog, a blind man with a guide dog. So this is something that's been around a long time. And what I'm talking about tonight is assistance dogs, but I'm mainly talking now when it was finally structured, you see, because people have been probably doing this for a very long time. I'm saying also there are a lot of hearing dog programs now in the United States, a lot of them. It is quite unusual that you train them in your own home as we did, but I had no other option. So. And now I'm going to talk about therapy dogs, or assistance dogs. We have guide dogs, hearing dogs, but we have a whole classification of assistance dogs. Some of them are called service dogs, support dogs, wheelchair dogs, handy dogs, independence dogs. So you have all these kind of notations for these kind of dogs that will help be therapy. It's a whole gradation of things depending on the needs of the person, and I promote that you sort of tailor make it, and that's how some of you have heard me before. We do that. And when did this all sort of therapy stuff started? Well, probably BC, but for organized programs, probably it really got going in the 70s. We started with visitation of animals in nursing homes and placement in about 74, 75. This is Phil Arco at the Pikes Peak Humane Society, and he's written a lot about using animals in therapy, and that's what they did in their pet mobile here. They go out and visit people. And he started in about 74, too. And he's done a good job of it. He's a member, he's on the board of the Delta Society and a lot of other things. But in 74, 75, we placed some kittens in a nursing home in Moscow, Idaho, because it was easy to get in there. They thought that wasn't a bad idea. And one of these kittens was called Geriatrics, and now it is. It's still there. And that was back in 74, 75. But it got to be a big cat and pregnant, and as I told you the other day, and I had kittens, and then the party really became informal. But we now have animals in all of the nursing homes and convalescent homes, either visitation or placement, in all our area, and they're pretty. It's expanding remarkably. But I got to take you down to San Francisco. There, Humane Society probably visits 120 different nursing homes, hospitals, and centers. My friend Marty Wilson in Atlanta, in that Humane Society, she's in charge of visitation. I think last count she was about 75 nursing homes, convalescent homes. So it's really growing a lot and improving a lot. Early on, you know, you just go down to the Humane Society, pick up a fuzzy little thing, and haul it off to the nursing home, drop it off at the door, and say, now your troubles are over. As I said the other night, their troubles are just starting. It isn't that easy. This takes a lot of work and a lot of preparation. And a lot of people make jokes about this. They trivialize it. A lot of the health delivery system does, because it isn't very scientific, you see. A lot of counselors use animals in interview situations and sometimes in adversary relationships, but an animal present changes the whole milieu of the situation. And a lot of clinical psychologists and psychiatrists use them, but they usually don't talk about them because it isn't very professional. It isn't considered professional. Or you'll see a headline say, take two kittens, go to bed, and call me in the morning. The functions of companion animals, where they have an effect on the health of a person. We look for something to decrease loneliness, which I said is probably our worst disease. Something to care for, something to keep you busy, something to touch and fondle, something to watch, something to make you feel safe, something to provide stimulus for exercise. But they've left out in this list, that somebody else's list, for fun and humor. That's probably our best therapy. And that's what these people do. And you see it when you bring these animals in, big smile on them. I'll never forget when I was teaching down at Murdoch University and I took the students out to a nursing home. And there was one guy there who said, well, they got a dog in there on an experiment because you were fitting to have dogs, but you could run an experiment to see its effect. And this guy said that all dogs should be outside. But whenever anybody came with a dog, he was the first one there to let him in. So, and now, where we started off on this, to become involved in training animals to help handicapped people, was at this maximum security prison for women in Western Washington. I told you about the other night, and I'm going to expound on that a little more. But where I got my idea on this, I myself was a prisoner of war, so I have some appreciation for that and separation from warm fuzzies. But I also remember the Birdman of Alcatraz, a fantastic story. And this fellow, David Lee, who is at, used to be called Lima State Prisoner, Lima Prison for the Criminally Insane, it's now called the Old Oakwood Forensic Center. It's the same institution, and he's still there. And he started with these people an animal program in, I think, two wards compared with a third. And you had to sort of earn your rights for one of these animals. You had to sacrifice some. And after a while, they then checked back on these to see how the people were doing. And they found out that those wards where the animals were on used far less drugs to keep them quiet, and there was far less trouble, that is, fighting and difficulty, controversies with the staff and others. One of the concerns, of course, in any situation like this with the criminally insane is, are the animals safe? And they were really very gentle with these, but they did have, and I'm reminded, Keith, what you mentioned, you know, some of these people, boy, they can tear things up if they really go on a rampage. And that happened one day at this prison, in the day room. This fellow went berserk. He tore up everything, save two things. After it was all over with, there were only two things still standing. And that was the bird cage and the fish bowl. And the other prisoners protected it at the risk of severe damage to themselves. So this caused us to really look at this. And you see, as I told you, I visited prisons and nursing homes, but mental hospitals in my youth. And I was impressed with that they had access to animals, and I felt that it was very nice, very fine for them. And I told some of you, maybe I did, I don't know, I told somebody, you know, when I was teaching at the University of Tennessee, I taught there a couple of times, short courses, and they had flocks and herds in their prisons. And the head of clinics at the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, at a veterinary school, he knew my interest in this, and he'd tell me these various stories. And he said, I recently went out to this prison in Western Tennessee, and they had a big hog operation head for many years. And he knew that one of the head herdsmen there was a prisoner. And he, as soon as he arrived on this visit, he came to see him and he was in desperate straits. He says, you got to help me, he said. He says, I've been here for 32 years and now they're going to turn me loose. And he says, I don't think I can make it without these pigs. So you see the kind of, well, here, boy, that didn't take long. You got three in a hurry there. Did you see that first lady? I can't back this thing up, isn't it? So what was Kathy? And she had been, as I mentioned to some of you, incarcerated 35 times in 14 different institutions before the age of 20, from 13 to 20, permanently scarred from this experience. She and I talked a lot about, and I said, you should get a wheelchair, which you saw in the last one if you were looking, you know, and train your dog. She could train a dog to do anything. fact, she was a girl I was going to have train my wife's dog to be a hearing dog, and she would have done it. But, and she had a person come in one time into her parish who was wanted a companion animal, and he was a thalidomide. I showed you a picture of him the other day. And she says, what are we going to do? We're going out to the state prison at Gig Harbor, and we're going to start a program, and I'll bring two of the best trainers I can find. We're going to train the animals to help handicapped people. And I said, yeah, and you're going to also train animals from the Animal Control Center, so they're in obedience training. It'll do the prisoners a lot of good to give obedience training, and some of them can't train for some special animals. It'll give them a good feeling of self-worth. They'll get attached to the animal and do them a lot of good. Because I know when I sent my wife off to obedience school with her dog, it did her a lot of good as well as the dog. And so that's what they did. And it proved out very well. But here's one of the prisoners. In fact, that prisoner is the best trainer out there. She's a lifer for reasons. And I won't tell you the reasons. Very outgoing person. At first, she was, everybody gave her a wide berth, so somewhat of an incorrigible. About she, we got money for a private source for a kennel. She was put in charge of the kennel. And she's now a hero to about 36 or 8 people for whom she's trained the animals. We have them meet the person they're training for in every case that can be arranged. She trained that first dog for Bert. And this is Bert here. You see him, he's only got one finger on that hand and one of the small ones on the other. And this is his dog, Glory. And it pulls his wheelchair. If he falls down, he's a little short guy, and he walks like this, and he can't walk very far. And he has trouble picking things up. And he, as I say, he can't walk very far. When he falls down, he has trouble getting up. The dog, if you say stay, the dog is like the Rock of Gibraltar, and you can get upright again. It takes him 13 rings to get to the phone, usually up to 13 rings. Most people don't let the phone ring 13 times, except I do when I call my wife. And that dog can get the phone to him on the second ring. And it opens doors, holds doors open for him, and a great companion. So it's changed his life, as my dog has changed my wife's life. My wife's life, because that's her freedom. See, she can operate alone with that dog. And she knows before she got the dog, I mean, people had come to the house, ring the doorbell, and we finally had to tell the neighbors, you know, that doesn't do it. You got to walk in and find her. Or the phone, you see. And a lot of people ask, you know, what's good is the phone? Well, she can hear some things. And we have an amplified phone system, but she can't hear it. She can say, call such and such a number and give the message, you see.
Yeah, but when you talk to her, she hears you. Because I was talking to her a long time the other day, and she...
You faced on her, and she was reading your lips.
I wondered about that.
Yeah.
I wondered.
But she also hears some.
Oh.
So she'll probably, between hearing, her hearing aids are set right, and the batteries are in, and you don't have a long mustache and beard, I think you got a good voice, you see.
Yeah,
it depends on the voice. So
voice.
She probably, a lot of people don't, when I tell them, well, she's hearing handicapped, they don't believe it. And some of it she can fake. And you get pretty good at that. So, this is the second animal she trained, and I told you about this. And this was Angie, who had all these series of seizures before she was born with them. And some of them were so bad, well, it required the presence of her mother and father at all times, night and day. And sometimes they wouldn't catch her in time, and she'd quit breathing and wipe out her memory. So she was always starting over in the first grade, you see. But now she's 14 or 15. So she took her down and introduced her to Sue. Whenever she was up, she had her hands tied to the wheelchair. Sue trained the a Sheba for her. And they practiced muscular fasciculation and stuff. But she picked up things, you're gonna pull her wheelchair. But the dog picked up on her seizures and can warn her before, knows when she's going to seizure before she does, and can warn her so she can lay back, relax, sometimes abort the seizure or get intervention. As I told some of you, she just a week ago now, I think yesterday or today, she was at a bus stop and the dog says, boy, you're going to have a seizure. And she got intervention right away. Boy, they hauled her off to the hospital. When we got to the hospital, everything quit. I mean, her heart quit. I mean, so the dog has saved her life, I suppose, 5 or 6 times.
What did the dog do when she saw
she was coming? Oh, she gets all excited and gets after her. Somewhat like the chief's dog. And the first time this happened, she got really mad at the dog. The dog was going crazy, and then she went into a seizure. Now, you say this is an anomaly. Because this really got me going, I says we gotta find out how you select these animals. Well, they now have 3 over there. The second one is this: as of March '88, I had the privilege and honor of being accompanied by my service dog Harley. Harley was specifically trained to get help if I should have a seizure. What he has accomplished is detect my seizures and warn me before they actually occur. He also alerts anyone around me. With this accomplishment, my whole life has completely changed for the better. Before Harley, I could do nothing alone. I was wheelchair bound on several occasions, paralysis. I mean, she might have 5, 6 seizures a day. I could not bathe, eat, sleep, or even go to school alone because of frequent seizures. Today, I am not only out of my wheelchair, but enjoying many physical activities. I bowl, shoot, league pool, go to school full time, and have gotten strongly active in the legal rights of disabled persons with service dogs. And boy, she's really raising the hob about that, too. I'll tell you, and she's very articulate. With Harley warning me of seizures in advance, I can avoid many dangerous situations. I no longer fear walking in front of cars, drowning in a bath, or having a seizure in a public facility. When I am out alone and Harley forewarns me, I can either go to a familiar place or call home or get someone to come and get me. I could write a book about all the abilities in each incident of his saving my life, but the thing I could never do justice to is describing what a true companion and friend he is, always full of love and understanding, yet never demanding anything. And then she goes in, seeing all the obstacles that she has. We still have people hassling us. Even bringing up Bridget here, you see, I write to the Lake Chelan Boat Company and say, we're coming up on a certain day, we're getting on Fields Point, we got a certified hearing dog. I've done this every year now for several years, you see. So she gets on at Fields Point, she goes over to get her ticket, and they say, hey, wait, you got a dog here, and start giving her a bad time, you see. Yeah. Say, well, that should be $12.50, you know. We'll excuse all that, and she explains it, and she pulls out her ID. Did she show you her ID? There's a picture of she and her dog, and it gives the rules on the back, and you can flash it, because we have the white cane law in this state is extended to other assistance animals, as they are now in many states, not in all, unfortunately. All right, then, so she gets on board, and then the guy stops her before she gets on board. Huh? Says, what are you doing with that dog here, you know? And then one of the honchos on the boat comes down and says, hey, what's that dog? And I said, that's a hearing dog that I wrote to you about. Oh, yeah, I remember that. We were expecting one today. I says, why didn't you tell the rest of those people out there? You know, people are always giving, hassling these people, you know. And I'm out to knock it off. And I hope you are, too. I mean, they got enough troubles without getting hassled. Huh? And when you go through all of this, I'll get off my high horse, but not for very long. It's righteous indignation. Here's the outside of the prison. It's hard to climb and go over. I've isn't worth the try. But here is an interesting group here. Sherry Schlorman is on the right, and Sharon Schroeder is on the left with Sport. It's a very interesting story. She had no father. Well, she had a father, but she never knew him. And he never helped. and her mother married again at the age of, when she was five. Her dog, her dad left at three. And she nursed her mother who had severe diabetes from 10 to 12 and then she died. And then she had to take care of, she didn't go to high school, she took high school correspondence and had to take care of this tribe. Give her a bad time till she got bigger than the sons and decked them one time, so that kind of cooled them. But she then wanted to be a veterinarian and she went to the University of Idaho and she joined us in our People Pet Partnership program. And so we involved her in this and helped her through. And she befriended Sharon there with sport. Sherry had sport. And she took in Sharon, who is a juvenile arthritic. She has prosthetic knees and hips. She can't climb stairs. She can't lift very much. We brought her into our office in PPP, and with a grant, she learned increased her skills as a computer operator. She types with her knuckles. And Sherry then helped her train her dog Sport and says, Sport is what you need to be independent. So old Sport is trained and he can pick up a lot of things. He carries a pack. You see that pack? That happens to be a certified assistant dog in the state of Washington. When you see in the state of Washington a black and red pack on a dog, chances are it's a certified support dog or assistant dog here in the state of Washington. And that's what Sport is. Now Sharon is living independently in Spokane with this dog. She goes shopping with it and the dog can go and get the can off the shelf without tipping the whole group over and pulling it out. And it's really neat, opens, helps her through doors. And it's pretty remarkable. And this is not, these are not lone examples. There's all kinds of people out there now that are living independently, who were dependent before and couldn't see any way out. And it's truly remarkable. Some of these dogs are trained to 80 to 90 commands. They can press elevator buttons, be trained to press an emergency button. Elevators, as I say, lights, doors, pick up things. One of the dogs originally trained here was Bear for a quadriplegic, who has only use of his mouth and his head. So the dog puts things in his mouth, like a pencil with the right end to it, so he can, that's how he uses his head and punches the computer buttons, you see. And he's a student. And this dog is, of course, a great help to him, carries things. And they fixed up a system so he can, the dog can bring him the lead, and then he can clasp the lead onto the dog with his mouth. There's a lot of things you can do when you have to. And I just wanted to bring in, I mentioned Beta Stolen in Bielefeld, and Beta Stolen, the sports plots north of Oslo, where they started using animals in therapy in addition to a lot of other things. That's where they teach blind people how to ski and all. Erling Stordal started as a blind musician and his wife. But here, you see them, they got horses. They also use dogs, and very important in their therapy. And that started, I suppose, in the early 70s. And they were so successful, they bought land in the Twin Cities and started a similar thing, I think, in the Twin Cities, from Norwegian money for them. The Canine Companions for Independence is one of the largest training areas now. And they use somewhat the system of the guide dog program. There are incidentally 10 guide dog, but they don't all go by guide dog. Some of them call it pilot dogs, seeing eye dogs, and seeing dogs, and so forth. But there are about 10 of them in the United States. They don't train guide dogs here, but they train hearing dogs. They call them signal dogs. But this is a typical story. And you see the Canine Companions for Independence uses a... it's a certified dog there, uses a yellow pack. But here is a boy that was essentially inoperative, but this dog has really done a lot for him, as it has for a lot of people down there. Just fantastic stories of causing, permitting people to be independent with the addition of an animal. They, as I say, have adopted some of the guide dog program where they pick the animals and then put them out for socialization for quite a while. And then get them back and really train them then for about 6 months. And then they bring the person in and try them out with various dogs and try to match up the dog to the person. And our prison, they train animals, you see, to address the needs of the person. And why this program, I think, has been so successful is that those dogs are, we work to permit the prisoners to have the animals with them in their cell. See? So these animals are with them continuously, you see. So they're really getting training all the time. So they're really well trained. And it changes the prisoners because it puts them in a position of nurture, and we're all by nature nurturers, and we need objects of nurture. And many of the prisoners I know are, many of them I think are there because they did not have, weren't nurtured, and certain our prisons are designed not to allow nurture. This is a great gal, Elma Reeves. She is wheelchair bound, and there's one of her dogs. And she started Handy Dogs in Tucson, Arizona. And if you're elderly or handicapped, you can arrange, she'll get you maybe a pup. And you raise the pup, and then you can go down there, and they'll train it for what it needs to serve you. See? You might need a hearing dog, so they'll train you. Or you, if you have a dog that's pretty good, you can go on down there and get it trained with them. So it's a great service. She was Woman of the Year down there, I think, this last year. I know we wrote her up, they wrote her up in the Delta magazine.
Can
really
you
a wonderful
any
person.
Any kind of dog? Any kind
now,
of dog is trainable?
You pick them out. You do a temperament testing, and you try them out on various tests. You tell them for intelligence, how they respond to voice. It's a whole battery of tests you run them through, you see. And hopefully you get a good one. We ordinarily wouldn't do like we did. We tried out a couple of tests. We made contact with the Hearing Dog Center in Massachusetts, worked with that trainer, our trainer did. The trainer that did ours wanted to do as an experiment. That's where when I sent the chief off for obedience training, that was with this lady. And she loved the chief and the dog, which I could understand. And she thought she could do something with it. And we run some tests with it. The dog didn't pass every one. But, you know, we had to go with it, you know. We didn't have any options.
Thank you.
And, yes?
Just one other time, there was a guide dog for the blind program that we had heard a presentation, and it was extremely expensive. You know, the training for
yes.
the animal was very costly. And I'm just wondering if the kinds of programs that you're talking about by being at the prison or with volunteers, are these also very expensive?
No, they're a lot cheaper. And most of them, they get outside funds so that you can give you a gift. Some of them charge $100, so maybe $25. Some are free. If you're going to buy, there's a few for profit. And if you're going to buy, like if I went out to buy a hearing dog today from somebody where I had to buy it, you're into it for about $3,000, probably $2,500, $3,000. Some of the training may cost up to $10,000, depending on what you're training for. From $1,000 to $10,000 is sort of a broad range. You also run into, you know, we're going to go into a lot of animals. We won't cover it all, but I'm just reminded what you run into. I encourage the British to start a hearing dog program, which they did, and they brought me there for a special meeting. Some years ago, and they had a press conference. And they asked me to introduce this dog, Chum, to this couple who were both hearing handicapped, the Chapmans, who had a hearing dog, who had a school for children who were hearing handicapped and were disturbed youngsters. They ran this school for them, and so this dog was going to be trained for them, and it was their first dog. it was a great privilege for me to, of course, to do this. And it was a interesting press thing. And I told him how, you know, how my our dog service, my wife, one person, and how it works. And for here, it's going to have an impact not only on these couple, but on all those children. I've been to a lot of press conferences in many places in the world. Usually the press corps is a pretty tough bunch of people. And they applauded after this because of what this meant. And I was invited to a lot of programs. And one of them was in the London Broadcasting Company. I was interviewed by Carol Thatcher, whose mother is well placed for at least a moment. Carol is a professional journalist. She has about the same sense of humor as her mother. This is off the record. But she had done her homework, and she asked the right question. And it was a pretty good interview, as interviews go. And then it was a call-in show. And I'll never forget this. Everyone that called in was a handicapped person. The first one was a blind woman, a woman who was blind, I should say, a woman who had lost her sight. And she said, I want to tell you about my seeing eye budgie. A budgie is a budgerigar, it's an Australian parrot. Says, this morning I had to go out front yard, and I'd forgotten that I'd left that front door open. And as I was walking towards the door, and as the bird often does, it was resting on my shoulder. And just before I got to the door, just before I hit it, the bird flew up in my face and stopped me. Oh. I don't know. She also told me that it had one of these boxes like used for cats, you know, litter box for her bird. But when you're blind, how do you know they use it? But I didn't question it. But it was an interesting discussion. So there's a lot of possibilities. That was PAC. That's quite a program. That PAC program is at University Place. It's State College, Pennsylvania State College. And this fellow, they got this program where they place animals and follow them up with a person with people in living independent in their homes. And this is an interesting thing. This is the Institution for Rehabilitation Research in Houston. And there's Linda Hines, who she and I have worked together now since 74 on this. She's executive director for the Delta Society now, but she used to be with me in the dean's office. Director of some things. The woman in the white is a fantastic person. She herself is handicapped, but not in her head. It's Carolyn Bonke, who's a physician in charge of the head trauma unit at this place. And she insists that her patients there have access to dogs. They bring in animals. And for comatose people, they'll have them take their hand and stroke the animal while they're comatose. In fact, one day a person came out of the coma while they were stroking the animal. Two others, when they woke up, asked where the dog was. So she's doing some research on this, you know, to investigate this. She's also a member of our board. And the other thing that she notices is that these children ask for the dog to be there when they're going to stick them with a needle for any painful procedure, because the dog won't let them hurt them. The truth of the matter is, as I told you the other day, it appears that the presence of an animal seems to block pain. There's a lot of examples of that now, and there's a growing number of them. I do not know the mechanism. Like, here's one of the boys in there. Really neat. And this is Lynn Anderson, and Dr. Polydog and friend. He's now the president of the Delta Society. Very articulate person. He's a veterinarian from our school. He also did graduate work in social work. And he's the first consultant to the Surgeon General on the human-animal bond. He's at the hospital in San Antonio and Brooks Army Medical Hospital. And he introduced Dr. Polydog and another dog into the psychiatric wing. of that hospital and done a remarkable thing for those children. Like there's one kid that, boy, he fought all the way, what he called blood shots. He didn't like shots at all. And he gave everybody a bad time. He upset his parents and everybody along the way. So he brought Dr. Polydog in, and the kid saw it and he said, I want to play with Dr. Polydog. He said, after your shot. Zing! Down her. Boy, he didn't even feel it, you know. Because Polydog was at the other end. This, I've already shown you, some of you, this. This is at Denver Children's Hospital, where they were, the veterinarians worked with the physicians for a couple of years, got everything together and introduced the animals to the patients. And there again, it takes their mind off their troubles. And they were so pleased with this, they've extended to all services except intensive care and newborn. So more and more we're seeing this. It's a slow process, but to change status quo takes a lot of doing. This is a veterinarian down in Boise, and she works with a nurse. They take in 4-H and latchkey children, show them how to help mutt dogs and how they operate. And then they put dark glasses on them, earplugs in their ears, tape up their hands, these are taped hands, and then give them bottles to open, see. So you have some appreciation of what old people put up with. And now they're ready to take an animal down and visit the old people. So that's kind of a neat deal. So you can call, are these therapy dogs? I guess they are. We select ours very carefully. We're running them through a procedure. Not only the person, but also the animal. They gotta pass the, both of them have to pass the test. Sometimes the dog or the cat might pass the test, but we're worried about the person. And you asked about funding. This is Moses, that's where it all started. What about the funding? You know? How do you implement these 10 commandments, and how do you place these animals? And that is a problem. Most of our work is volunteer, what I and others put into it. And now I'm going to just introduce a few famous people to you. I've been trying to get a picture with Dame Cicely Saunders and her cat, and I've still failed the last time I pleaded with her. Dame Cicely Saunders won the Templeton Award a few years ago, the year after Mother Teresa. Templeton put up the money because he thought the advances in religion were more important than advances in science, so he made it bigger than the Nobel Prize. And that's what it is. Dame Cicely Saunders is sort of the modern mother of the modern hospice movement. She started St. Christopher's Hospice. If you've never been there, it's remarkable, in South London. She started a modern hospice movement. Remarkable person. So the last time I pleaded with her for a picture, she sent me a picture of her, she was recently married, of her husband, who's an artist, and her cat. She has some remarkable things to say about the cat. And this is a friend of mine named Maggie Kuhn, co-founder of the Grey Panthers. And a real character, but she loves cats, and she likes what we're doing. Apparently, she tells me so. Another friend, we helped her write this book. She just sent me another book. Her name's Betty White. She appears on television. So, she's a real character. I mean, a real got a lot of pizzazz. Animal selection is so very important, and we often think of, you know, dogs and cats for this, but a lot of other things work. I wanted to answer a question here that's often asked. Do people sometimes pick out animals like themselves or get to look like their pets? Well, this girl looks like a rabbit, same color hair and everything. So that's example one. I just had to throw that in there. This fellow's pet was this cow. Had it for 31 years. You know? That's one of the oldest cows I know. I know of one other that's 30. That's up on Tiger Mountain. And boy, he cried when that cow died. That's longer than most people are together, with fewer problems. Goats are great. I at one time had a corner on miniature goats. Got them from down Thousand Oaks. I got the foundation stock from down Thousand Oaks at Rudy's hometown. And I like them because they attract beautiful goat herds. But goats, I had a pet goat. They're really great. A lot of elderly people like goats, in spite of the smell. And here's a Martha. I knew Martha. I used to get birth announcements when Martha had little pigs. You'd call Martha from several hundred feet away. Really neat. Children love her. I'll tell you more about her tomorrow night. And this is a llamas are coming into being very good therapy. And also for interview situations, counseling situations. And I told you, some of you, that I told you about this lady, Diane Rush, from the Midwest, got dogs and cats, but she brought Hershey, her rabbit, to her last meeting in Orlando. And she wanted me to meet it. She's the one that I said that enhances socialization. She sat down in the lobby of this Stauffer Hotel, beautiful thing, sat down in a chair on the second day of the meeting, sat there for a half hour, see how many people would come and talk to her, and nobody came and talked to her. So she ran up and got Hershey, came down and sat in the same place, and 21 people talked to her in a half an hour. So get a rabbit. Huh? Birds are great. And I'll never forget when I was to the Lorton prison, where they have a great program. A friend of mine named Earl Strimple, the veterinarian in Washington, got a great program there in town in Washington, D.C. He started his program out at Lorton prison, which is a tough spot. I and Linda were out there and gave a talk. But we felt perfectly safe with them because they had their animals with them. And this is one of the prisoners. And his bird, Nunya. Asked him, where do you get that name? He says, none of your business. We asked him, you know, what do the animals do for you? What does the animal do for you? He said, it takes the anger. Well, that's what they do. And birds can help a lot. And what I have, that's a cockatiel. Over at the Tacoma Lutheran Home, my associates, we did the plans for the Tacoma Lutheran Home on how they should structure their pet therapy program. That's why they got what they have there now. They followed the plans and it works. And one of the things, they have cockatiels. And some of them, when they lay eggs, of course, the people come by twice a day to see if they've hatched. And then they finger train the little ones, and now and then they teach them the wolf whistle. They like to have a cocktail and get a wolf whistle, especially when there's visitors, you know, and they go, you know, they look around wondering what's going on. And one of them, they had them, you know, they have them, some of them doing the bicycle, you know, and they had one cockatiel that would sit on this lady's foot, and she did this, and whenever she stopped, the bird would squawk high heaven to get her going again. And they use them in the therapy room that relaxes them. The dog would take them into the Alzheimer's wing, and there's one lady that just raised all kinds of cane, but never in the presence of the dog. It seems to take them back, especially if you've had animal association. This also shows the benefit of birds. I'm a bird watcher, and whenever I go to have a little time at a foreign place, you go like here in Sydney, Australia, you go to the Museum of Science and History, and they have a list of people that will take crazy Americans birding. You see? That's what I did, and this lady picked me up, and she knew all the birds in that whole area. And it was a really great thing, but she says, we got to quit a little early because I want to get you down to Marjorie Sykes. And down in the village here, and she feeds these birds. Look at all she feeds. She feeds them at 7 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 to 5. And she has all these birds she's been doing for 12 years. And if she's late in the morning, they come out, the birds come after her and sit on her head. So it was a good place to bird watch, too. And she was really a pistol. That's therapy. Boy. And she's needed. And so that was great. Another famous guy, we honored him on his 80th birthday in Austria, Conrad Lorenz. He shared the Nobel Prize back many years ago. It was his 80th birthday, and we had a big international conference. And I gave the accolades for him from the English-speaking world. And here, I told him that geese made him famous. Of course, he also made geese famous. But geese are also good. And this is also Connor Lorenz. He said many, many years ago, a man can sit for hours before an aquarium and stare into it, and the flames will open fire. All conscious thought is happily lost. Since then, it's been scientifically shown that if you watch fish, your blood pressure falls and your anxiety level falls. That's why you'll see more and more aquarium in dental offices and others now. They actually study dental offices. So this is a fellow, he spends 4 or 5 hours in one of the nursing homes watching fish. Great help to him. Here's some of the animals you don't pick. You don't pick any wild or exotic animals, with very few exceptions. Certainly not either a non-human primate or an elephant.
I thought chimpanzees were used.
Capuchin monkeys?
They are, but I'm not so sure it's a good idea. I can go into that in some depth afterwards. Dachshunds are, we got to go pretty soon. Dachshunds are ideal dogs for small children, as they're already stretched and pulled to such a length that the child cannot do much harm with them. They aren't my choice, although I know this fellow I told you about the other night that counsels with his chimp with over 50 animals of 8 different species, including llamas. But he has 2 very good dachshunds that he puts on the lap of the person that's being counseled, if they permit it, or a cat. I think we're getting to the point maybe we can pick out the kind of animal we need for a special occasion and do it. If you want something you can play tit-tat-toe on, you get this combination. Doesn't always work. Best laid plans don't always go. But we have to keep trying, okay? But sometimes we say no. I mean, it isn't a situation where the animal may be at risk or the person cannot handle it. So it isn't for everybody. This is a great story, and I'm going to have to wait. Maybe tomorrow I'll tell you this fantastic story of this Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. We gave him, I found out about his case, so we gave him the President's Award, and I can do that as President. I could give it to him for a meeting of the Delta Society up in British Columbia. He had about given up with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. And we introduced it, and he was introduced to this horse, Dancer. The Dancer seemed to sense that he couldn't do a lot of things. And he won prizes in dressage with this horse. So he got his spirits back. He was now 13 when we brought him to this conference. And it was his last go. It was a fantastic affair, which I'll tell you about later. And he died the following day. But great story. Here he is on the horse. And I got to tell you about that. And the Delta Society is the central repository for the world on these subjects that I've been discussing here this week in Renton, Washington. If some of you are interested, I have just a couple of flyers left.